permits. Start off with a little background on deer. We're just now looking at our 2016 harvest information statewide. Numbers are down from last year. I think you'll remember that I was waving the banner last year about what a great year we had in 2015 in terms of deer harvest, but I also cautioned that that's not going to happen every year, and so it didn't happen every year. So 2016 is right about at the long-term average for deer harvest statewide, but we did have a drop. Also had a very slight drop in deer hunter participation statewide. There's some debate about whether this is consistent with national averages on slight declines on hunter participation. The other thing I would mention on this this particular slide, this is actual hunters, either general season or special permit, that went out in the field and hunted. Our licensed sales, that's a higher number than this. These are just the folks that actually went out in the field that year. So, occasionally folks do buy a tag and don't have a chance to get out for a variety of reasons. So on the deer general season's WAC, 232-28-357, want to remind everyone that this is the third year of a three-year package, so we're not bringing very many major changes at all to you. We are proposing to restore a late archery season in GMUs 204 and 209 to the longer 2015 structure. For 2016, we had recommended that season length be shortened a little bit. On the boots staff, on the ground staff, felt like they needed to be a little more conservative on that one. It was mostly a reaction to post-fire habitat conditions and some of their survey work that they were looking at. In hindsight, they decided that more conservative approach wasn't really necessary, and we did hear a lot from the public on those two particular GMUs, and so we're proposing to put it back the way it was in 2015 with the longer late archery time period. And then in the general season, there's also some proposed exceptions to GMU 382 to accommodate the special permit season for the new deer area, which we just talked about, deer area 5382, and so that language would read, this season opened for this GMU except for the deer area, which will have a different season structure, and we do that routinely. That's not new. That precedent is set. So our rationale for setting up our general season deer hunting seasons. This applies across the board. We want to maintain conservative season structures whenever that's necessary. We do want to retain a hunting season framework that isn't going to have any kind of a negative impact on the wildlife populations, on the deer populations. In all cases, our mission, part of our mission statement is to maximize hunter opportunity whenever we can. That doesn't necessarily mean maximize harvest, but we do try to maximize opportunity. And then we will be entertaining ideas for major changes in the upcoming three-year package. And so immediately after the April meeting, when 2017 rules are adopted, we'll be jumping in with both feet to work on the 2018 to 2020 hunting season. So that's where we'll start having our public meetings and talking to the regions and looking at what major changes folks might have in mind for the next three-year cycle.
That being said, so when will that process begin for the 2018 three-year package?
That process will begin internally, very early in the spring, May, June.
Of this year.
Okay. And then we just sort of scheduled out our public meetings throughout the state, and so those will be happening in July and August. And there will be a step in there in terms of at the front end and during the public meeting process, where we'll also take in information from the public on probably via the website, where folks can get their ideas in. We also need to get the ideas in from regional staff on what they're hearing and what they're thinking needs to be done. And so all of that will start to kick off about May-ish.
And there again, I realize there's always a lag in time because you said you're just getting the numbers from last year's hunting season. And I know what you had there were state numbers. Mm-hmm. And there again, in our part of the world, we were hit very bad with the blue tongue. And, you know, there again, it's anecdotal. You can't put anything to it from my perspective. But as far as the deer harvest, it was bad. And different people I've talked to, the same. I know their last, I think first week, they were flying, getting game counts in our part of the world.
That's right.
Will you have that data by then to where we can kind of adjust some things if we need to be a little more conservative on things?
Yes and no, depending on the location and the species, but yes. And we'll get a lot of that from the biologists on the ground. Mm-hmm. One thing on the blue tongue outbreak that we had, the blue tongue episode that we had was late summer of 15, and then we went into the 15 hunting season and had a very good deer hunting season in 15, and so not surprising to me to hear. Some folks didn't have a great deer year in 16.
Well,
not
and then
surprising to see that statewide is down a little bit.
And there again, then we stacked a pretty tough winter on top of them this year. So I'm thinking that we probably had a couple of double whammies on them. So that all I'm hoping for is that we can have some truly meaningful data going ahead on structuring some of these seasons, you know, and I'm not advocating we're going to cut it, but there again, structure seasons around populations, and there again, we still have to keep in the back of our mind that we have a burgeoning wolf population, too, that needs to be factored in along the way, too. So, okay, thank you, Jerry.
So, any other questions yes. on the deer general season whack?
Back to the slide on hunter participation, mm-hmm. That is a disturbing slide to me because that's a downward trend over a 15-year period, probably 16 to 17% change in hunter participation. Have we done things to try to understand what's going on? Is it simply that people just aren't taking up hunting, or is there a concern about opportunity here that is having hunters go elsewhere or dropping out simply because of lack of access? Have we tried to parse that at all?
Well, I think all of those reasons are probably part of the equation and valid variables into this. It's been about 3 or 4 years since we've done a real no fool in public opinion survey. Typically, we use an organization out of Virginia that are experts at that. So we haven't in recent history talked to our hunters about what are the reasons you might not be going out. But I think all of those items that you mentioned, I think are factors.
If I could just follow up, as I said, I'm very concerned about that slide. That's a big drop, and it's a downward trend. So I know these opinion surveys are costly, and you know we're looking at our budget. But I think it would be really important to try and achieve that information. because it's important. We talk about opportunity, so it's important to parse.
We are about to enter, maybe that's what Eric's walking up to say, we are about to enter with other states into another statewide survey that has some specificity down to counting that county at the county level that deals with the hunting questions, fishing questions, non-consumptive questions. So it'll be a while before we see that data, but we are in a cycle to do that again.
A while would be a year?
I would guess a year.
Okay. Eric, did you have to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In addition to that, you're right, I was going to talk about that, but we also have David Whipple, our Hunter Education Division Manager, is very much plugged into what's referred to as R-cubed or R3, which is recruitment, retention, and reactivation of hunters. And we've been participating in the national efforts as facilitated discussions around that. And, of course, it connects back to our involvement with the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies and the Western Association, where this has been a topic across the country and certainly the West for the last decade or more, and it's a challenging situation. There's just a variety of things that are driving that decline, and certainly a lot of efforts underway to see what we can do to increase in all three of those R's. So,
yeah, and Eric, thank you. Are you aware of, Commissioner Thorburn's concern? It reflects about a 17% drop. Does that correlate with the national trend?
The national trend, I think, is very similar. I guess I don't know the number. I don't want to say for sure, but I think that would be similar. And again, that was also, remember, Dazen, that this is actual hunters who went into the field. Our license sale numbers are not as steep of a decline, if I recall correctly, for this past year. And so sometimes it just has to do with weather, circumstances, competing priorities. But our hunter license buyer base did not have such a precipitous decline, and it's probably closer to the national average on that.
And I remember the WAFLA meeting recently that was, it's about the same nationally.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
So
there's like one or two states that are outliers on that, but
yeah. I guess I want to add something really quickly, because there again, having spent my whole life where I live, and used to be opening day of deer season was, a holiday. And elk season wasn't further behind. And I haven't seen it such a steep drop in the deer hunting, but the elk hunting, because with the choosing of weapons and the way they string all the seasons out, the archers get quite a shot at it first, and then the muzzleloaders. And by the time, if you want a rifle hunt, you're wasting your frickin' time in our part of the world, because they've been picked through because we draw permits for big bulls and spikes is what you hunt. And by then, they're either shot out or run off someplace. And it still amazes me to this day. You go, I thought today was opening day of elk season. And you don't see any hunters where there used to be just literally cities of elk hunters. And there again, it's changed, and I know that you have pressures brought to bear by you guys, but the whole concept of elk hunting has changed, because you just don't get the big groups of people going out anymore and going hunting, because this guy archery hunts, this guy muzzleloads, and it isn't the big experience. And it is really had an effect, and that's putting pressure on people that do go hunting.
And I think that's a reason. There's lots of these reasons that are out there. When I was growing up, the opening day of deer season was a school holiday. I don't think socially that would be acceptable today. And also the opening day of pheasant season was pretty much a school holiday in Michigan. So it is going down, and that's a reality for reasons like Commissioner Holzmiller said, societal reasons. And the three R's that you said were good, but when we met with the governor yesterday, one thing we talked about was engaging youth. And I'm going to keep harping on that all the time, because I think that's something that we can't just say it's a nice thing to talk about without having some concrete things that we're going to be doing. So I'm just going to keep throwing that one out there because that's the future license buyers and protectors and engagers in our world of nature. So
right, and in this day and age, there are an awful lot of competing interests.
Right.
When you compare hunting and fishing to all of the other things that young people might be interested in doing. So,
and my fear is that when we get youth that are not engaged in nature at all, they don't understand it, they don't appreciate it, they won't champion it. And that goes across the whole spectrum of how we enjoy nature.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay. Come on, Charles.
Okay. All right. I think Commissioner Holtzmiller just brought this up, and I appreciate that he brought this up. Want to do just a little bit of a sidetrack here and talk about our past winter. In a number of locations throughout the state, we had a relatively severe winter. We had an above average winter. The amount of snow that fell, snow on the ground, the number of days that snow cover was there, colder than normal temperatures in a period during the middle of winter there. We also had some situations in a number of places in the state where we had sort of this warming and raining and melting and then freezing situation where we got a lot of crusting on snow, and that created some additional challenges for deer and elk population. So, we did not have a trivial winter this year. If you take a look at this photograph, this animal is fine. If you look right back here, it has an immobilization dart in its rump. Our very excellent staff were capturing elk up in the northeast part of the state this winter as part of our predator-prey project. And so this was one of the animals that was caught. Aerial darting from helicopters, very challenging, very dangerous, but our folks are great at it. The reason I'm showing you this photograph is that this animal didn't lay down in the snow. This animal was walking through the snow, and it decided to stop walking and take its nap. So it was a nice, soft landing, but that animal's legs are almost fully extended underneath it in the snow. So a lot of snow in some of these places where we were capturing elk. That's an adult cow, yes. Mm-hmm. So, not a trivial winter by any means. This is a graph that you folks have seen from me on a number of occasions. This is one of our winter severity indices. This one is specific to the northeast part of the state, so there are six or so snowtell sites that are used in combination with temperatures to get a handle on the severity of a winter. So this doesn't necessarily apply everywhere in the state, but it is an indicator. The white line across there is the long-term average. The red line is where we've sort of arbitrarily said that's where we're at a severe winter, so anything above that we really need to be paying attention to. The last dot on the line isn't red yet, because this final calculation isn't done until the end of March. Don't anticipate that certainly coming down. So this was a severe winter. We've sort of skated by, and I think I mentioned this in previous years. The last six or seven winters, we've kind of been average or below average, so we've kind of been skating by, and now we finally had a real winter, and that's going to influence some of the things that we bring before you. As Commissioner Holtzmiller mentioned, we've got people flying right now. So we just stepped out of the helicopter on the Blue Mountains elk surveys. Folks are still actively doing the Clockham elk surveys. We've completed the Yakima elk surveys, but there was enough interest in what we saw in those surveys that we're going to do a second follow-up survey on the ACMA elk population. Not do the entire full survey, but do a subset of that just to sort of confirm what we think we're seeing out there. There was some distributional stuff that was influenced by the snow and the winter conditions. We've still got some late season, late winter, early spring mule deer surveys that are on point to happen anytime. So say all that to say, especially the special permit numbers that you see in your notebooks for deer and elk right now, when we come to you in April with those are going to be ratcheted down. And a number of places we're going to be recommended adjustments that a number of those come down, especially on the antlerless side of things. So fair warning today, those numbers aren't all going to stay where they are right now. In terms of the deer populations leading into the deer special permit WAC, in the Okanagan, I'll try to be as brief as possible on these tables, but in the Okanagan, we've already put in your notebooks some reduced antlerless special permit opportunity. Buck ratios still look good, so that's probably the level of adjustment that you're going to see for mule deer in the Okanagan. The Chelan surveys are about to happen. That's one of the ones that we're on point here any day to be doing if the weather would cooperate with us. But you'll likely see some reductions in antlerless special permit opportunities there as well. In the Blue Mountains, we invested all of our resources in elk surveys this year in the Blue Mountains, and so we're going by what we see on the ground and our harvest information. At this point, not hearing much in the way of changes on the deer special permits from the Blue Mountains area. Columbia Basin, our last aerial survey in the basin proper was 2015. So 2016, which is when we do those early winter post hunt. Most of that work was done from the ground, and not really seeing any concerns there. So not really going to be proposing any major changes there. The Douglas County area, we did do aerial surveys in there this year. It's been the first time in a long time that we've done aerial surveys in the Douglas area. The buck ratios look fine, but we'll probably see some reductions in antlerless permits there as well. Columbia Gorge aerial surveys, no warning flags there, and our buck ratios look good. Our overall deer numbers look good. And then East Slope Cascades, that kind of is joined at the hip with the Chelan and some of the Region 3 pending deer surveys. And so those are about to happen, but we'll likely see a little bit of reduction in special permits there. Although we've reduced the Region 3 antlerless opportunity for mule deer about as much as we can already because of other population issues there. In terms of the white-tailed deer populations, in the Selkirk area, the harvest data that we saw for 2016 was right at the average, almost spot on. Our pre-hunt surveys, the fawn ratios were down quite a bit. Our buck ratios were right at the long-term average, and we're at objective and look good. There's also, based on the last 2 years, there isn't much more we can reduce on antlerless opportunity there for white-tailed deer. In the Palouse, most of that information is on white-tailed deer is gathered on ground surveys. Things are looking fine there. We're not proposing any changes. Again, with the Blue Mountains, mule deer are really the thing that we count the most in the Blue Mountains. We're going by harvest data for white-tailed deer. Not seeing any issues there, not recommending really any changes. Columbia Basin, North Cascades, limited whitetail populations in there, not really a factor. And then in the Okanagan Highlands, we gather up most of our whitetail deer information when we're doing mule deer work. And so that's sort of ancillary to the mule deer survey work. And as I mentioned before, in the general season discussion, we're proposing restoring some days to those late archery in those two GMUs, 204 and 209. And as always the case, because of where they live and how they live, we pretty much base all of our management decisions for black-tailed deer right now on based on the harvest data, and we're not proposing any changes there. So for the deer special permit WAC, 232-28-359, we do have, as I mentioned, some winter surveys that are still pending and will be happening any day, every day, for the next week or so. Our antlerless special permits, as I mentioned, will be ratcheted down in your April notebooks. Okanagan, we've pretty much made that adjustment, and you have it in your notebook already. Chelan and Douglas likely see some more reduction there on antlerless permit numbers. And then Blue Mountains, right now I'm not expecting any changes, but we'll continue to talk about that and see if there are any last-minute ideas on that. I know they have some ideas on elk, and we'll get to that in a minute. And then our quality special permits will be adjusted, as they always are, through the special permit allocation process. For those of you who aren't familiar, the special permit allocation process for the quality and the highly sought-after tags, we use a formula that is has been sanctioned by the commission back in the 90s to come up with those numbers. And so a very similar direction and rationale to what we saw for general seasons. We're maintaining conservative seasons when we feel it's appropriate. We adjust the antlerless opportunity when we think it's necessary. We're always trying to maintain a season framework that provides maximum opportunity without having a negative impact on the populations, and we're looking forward to going into the process for the next three-year cycle. So, questions on the deer special permit WAC?
So, I think I'm a little bit confused on the Selkirk whitetail. Mm-hmm. The fawn proportions were down.
Prior to the hunting season, yeah.
Prior to the hunting season, but we've gone into this terrible winter.
Yes.
But we're going to maintain status quo. Is that simply because we're already at a low opportunity as we can go? Because my recollection was the antlerless restrictions were only in certain GMUs. Wouldn't it make sense with this risk of the winter on top of the fawn ratios to expand that to other GMUs?
Sure, that's a really good question, and you're right. With the severity of the winter, we're definitely going to see an above average overwinter mortality, and usually the age sex or age class that's typically impacted by that are the young of the year animals. And so going into a fall with low fawn ratios and then having a bad winter, that's going to have a serious impact. In terms of the antlerless opportunity, there's virtually no special permit opportunity in there now. There's still a little bit of general season opportunity that allows antlerless. So there's a four-day season for youth senior disabled hunters in the modern firearm season, and then there's about 6 days of archery that's also available and allows antlerless harvest. And so those are about the only two places left to do any tweaking, and whether that would have much of an impact on overall population or not, not sure.
Any other questions? Yes.
I don't want to stir up a whole big discussion about point restrictions again, but I do believe what I heard when we took up the four-point restriction years ago was that there was a feeling among those in Northeast who were very concerned about the status, the health of deer whitetail populations up there, as they looked at point restrictions as that additional tool that could be used. And I know that there isn't agreement that that's effective, but I did want to bring that forward, that there are constituents up there who think that that is a legitimate tool that could be used to reduce the harvest of bucks. Not just as a, in fact, they don't promote the idea as just a way to get trophy hunting. That's not what they claim they're after. They're after a way to reduce the harvest and build up the numbers. Now, I just have to say that's considered a tool by some of the people up there.
Okay. All right, shifting over to elk. Same graph that you saw for deer, statewide harvest. Statewide harvest is below average. We had our last big elk season back in 2012. It's kind of been bouncing around average until this year. We're a little bit below average this year. I will say that we have a very challenging situation with elk management in Washington State. We have, and I know you've heard me preach about this on a number of occasions, but we have more elk hunters per elk than any other western state. We are second only to California in human population size, but we're the smallest state in the 11 lower 48 elk states. So we're smallest in size, but we're second only in human population. Even though hunter numbers might be trending down a little bit, we still have an awful lot of interest in elk hunting with a finite resource, a limited resource. And so we're trying to find that balance of giving everybody an opportunity, maintaining a general season for everybody, a high value for Washington hunters, and not overdoing it on the harvest when it comes to elk. Same trend that you're seeing on elk hunter participation as you're seeing in deer hunter participation. The disparity between elk tags sold, elk licenses sold, and elk hunters that actually go in the field, that's quite wider than it is for deer. So we do have a lot of folks that will buy an elk license but not necessarily go elk hunting. We speculate that that's probably a function of folks putting in for highly valued, highly sought after special permit opportunities, and if they don't draw that, then they decide to do something else. They go deer hunting, they go fishing, they go upland bird hunting. So that's probably one of the reasons for that disparity. Mentioned a little bit of this already. We've completed the Yakima herd follow-up primary surveys. We're going to be doing a follow-up survey that's a subset of what we normally fly. At this point, the herd looks like it's below objective, and you will be seeing some reduced antlerless special permit numbers from us when we walk in April. The Clockham surveys are probably going on right now if the weather's allowing. That population is at objective. And you'll also probably see some reduced antlerless opportunity for that herd as well, trying to keep it at objective and not overdo it. The Blue Mountains herd appears to be at objective. Those flights were just done a day or two ago. But it's probably at the lower level of what we consider objective for that herd. And we did just receive some some additional adjustments down on antlerless permits. That's not in your notebook. It will be in April. But those aren't huge changes. There isn't a lot of antlerless opportunity for that population right now.
Jerry, this year I've had a lot of comment on our spike, true spike rule. Mm-hmm. A lot of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to get too far down the road. At what point would we review that?
Well, on the short term, we review it every year when we look at our survey information.
Okay.
But in terms of having a discussion broadly with the public on, are we going to retain it? Are we going to do something different? Are we going to go back to the old regular spike rule? Are we going to go to a full-blown special permit opportunity where we take away a general season from 3,000 elk hunters? That would be in the upcoming three-year package process. So as we go through the course of the summer, that would be something that we'd be talking to the public with, listening to the public about that season structure. If it sounds like that's
It's time for a discussion on that, I believe. I've heard it from both sides, both from enforcement as an issue and also from the hunting public as an issue. So it'd be a good time to review that issue.
Absolutely. Right. And I would just And I will add that, you know, when that rule was first pulled together, it was a time where our yearling bull survival in that population just wasn't up to snuff. And we weren't meeting our post-hunt bull objectives. And that was one of the reasons why. We went to the region and said, look, you guys got to come up with something. Either we abandon this notion of we're not really going to hold ourselves to a management objective, or we've got to figure out a better way to get at that objective. One of the possibilities was we just go to special permit only entirely. One of the problems with that is we at that time we had in the neighborhood of 3,000 hunters that were hunting elk in those GMUs. And so going to a special permit opportunity alone would either pull those people out of the hunting picture or likely displace them south to the Yakima elk population and increase the pressure there. And so in light of all of that, the region sat down, including the biologists and the enforcement folks. They did this in concert, came up with this very unusual rule, this very unusual restriction. And one of the reasons for that was that in all of their survey work, they often saw a higher proportion of yearling bulls branching antlers than we do in other places. And so we thought that that might be a way to get at this. It did effectively improve the yearling bull survival, but it was a tough rule to get used to for a lot of our hunters, no question about it. Yeah. I'm not going to wear you out with this. I think we've covered most of it already. One thing that I didn't mention is we're going to have a slight increase in bull special permits for the Nooksack population. Everything else I think I've hit on. Blue Mountains will see a little bit of a reduction in antlerless. The up and down arrows indicate that, you know, when we do the special permit allocation for the quality, highly sought after special permit opportunities, that we run that through the formula. And those will all be coming to you in April. So on the elk special permits, WAC 232, 28, 360, just mentioned all of these. Don't need to mention them again. Same direction and rationale that you've seen on the other things. Trying to maximize opportunity without negatively impacting the elk populations. So with that, if you have any questions on, I did.
You shut the skull.
I did use that one last year, I have to admit. But it's a really good photograph.
That is a good photograph, yeah. Okay, any questions? Well, thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome.
We'll break for lunch and 4 minutes ahead. Huh? Yeah, there's no public.
I have a question on all that. Is there a reason that we can't combine the Eastern and Western as far as the special permit application side of things? So, for instance, me being normally hunting Western Washington, but on the on the quality bull aspect, yeah, be able to apply to Eastern Washington?
Come on up, sit at the mic.
I'm sorry.
Hold on, this one go.
I apologize.
On this one, and then you got to fill out a form.
Okay.
Okay, go.
So, for me, normally hunting Western Washington on the quality bull aspect, just as a for instance, if I wanted to take it and apply for Blue Mountains, which is a very good quality area, I can't do that unless I designate Eastern Washington as my tag, and then I can't change my tag after the application's been applied for, even though there's no other areas that I would hunt in Eastern Washington because I normally hunt here. So I guess my question is that, and then in addition, there's certain quality hunts that, for instance, I'd rather do with a bow than do with a rifle, okay, or vice versa. You know, I'd rather hunt Eastern Washington with a rifle than a bow, maybe. Is there a reason that we can't, you know, change our tag allocation prior to us going in the field to actually hunt after we've applied for these special permit applications? I guess from me and in the circles that I run in, you know, we would apply for more and spend more money on those special permit applications if that wasn't so locked in, I guess.
Good question.
Sure. No, I think I can provide a brief answer on that. So back in 1984, that's how we got to some of these rules, and it harkens back to some of the stuff that I was mentioning earlier about how many elk hunters we have and how much pressure is on the elk populations. And you know, at that time we were an any bull, any weapon, you can hunt anytime you want kind of a thing. We have historically in the 80s, we've had it as complicated as 5 different areas in the state, and you could only hunt in one of those areas. So really what we're trying to do with all of these somewhat complicated rules is spread out the hunting pressure and not overdo it in one place or the other. We had this, we offered up this point of discussion at the last 3-year package, and one of those pieces of that was, well, let me apply for an east side tag, but if I don't draw, let me hunt on the west side. Folks on both sides of the mountain, once they started thinking about how that would work, decided that they didn't like that very much at all, because the folks on the east side who live on the east side and apply for those highly sought after special permits all the time suddenly realized that, well, if all the folks that currently have a west side tag are now going to start putting in for the Blue Mountains, my chances of drawing a special permit are going to get even worse, and they're already very difficult. And then the folks on the west side were thinking, well, if the folks on the east side put in for a special permit, they don't draw their special permit, they're going to come to the west side and hunt branch antlered bulls in my backyard. And I've already got too many people hunting elk in my backyard. And so that's part of that, trying to spread out hunting pressure, opportunity, making you choose a weapon type and stick with it. It's all about trying not to overdo the harvest on the elk populations, but also trying to give folks a choice. If I want to hunt a really low density hunt, the fewest number of hunters we have are in the muzzleloader category. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm going to switch to muzzleloader. If I really like archery hunting, we have a lot of hunters that used to hunt modern have switched to archery hunting. Even we hear from archery hunters now that the woods are getting too crowded. So we have the situation where we see our overall hunter numbers kind of ticking down, but we still have a pretty crowded woods when it comes to deer and elk hunting season. So that's why we do it the way we do it.
Hey.
And with that, please just fill up. You can right there, for the record. We will take a break for lunch until 1 o'clock when we will reconvene with Cooper.